Today is July 24th, 2013, and this is episode number 214 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, daydream believer and a homecoming queen. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
Oh, that's like the best ever. And I bet you look dreamy with your tiara.
Oh, definitely. I'm wearing it now.
I can see that through the glass. The thing that concerns me is that I'm pretty sure where the counter sits and it's whatever, it's high, you don't have pants on, do you?
Well, no, do you?
Well, no, but I don't have a tiara, so it's not quite as creepy for me.
So you say.
It's all a matter of perspective.
It's true. It is a matter of perspective. Speaking of perspective, I'm recording this on, at least on my end, with Logic Pro X, which I opened for the first time a few minutes ago. That's okay, right? There's something that's foolproof, right?
Oh yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
I so meant to play around with it ahead of time, but I didn't have time. What with Apple's earnings report yesterday, and here we are.
Yeah, and here we are. You're running untested software.
Uh-huh. Version, you know, 1.0 software.
Right. Wearing a tiara and no pants. Uh-huh.
And no pants, right.
I love this job.
Yes, good stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing can go wrong. So, speaking of Apple's earnings report. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, they came in at the high end of their own guidance for their revenue.
Yep. Beat estimates.
They beat estimates on iPhone sales.
Crushed estimates on iPhone sales.
Came in under on iPad estimates.
Yep, fairly significantly.
And we're a little low on Macs as well, but not significant like iPads.
No, not significant, and the Macs were barely a miss. Macs were barely a miss.
Right. So for iPhones, we're talking, what was it, 31.2 million.
Yeah, analysts are expecting 26.6, and last year Apple sold 26 million. So this is a significant beat on estimates, and it's a significant year-on-year beat. And, you know, the significance there is that you know, there's all these people talking about how stupid and awful the iPhone is and how much better Android is. And it turns out that the Galaxy S4 sales disappointed, and Apple crushed their estimates. Go figure.
Yeah, how about that? What that tells me is that when we say everyone is saying that Android is better and Android is selling better, what the reality is that there is a vocal minority, and that vocal minority is saying Android is better. Everyone likes Android better. Mwah, Android. Mwah.
Yeah, and Apple has a record quarter for iPhone sales. Record quarter on a 9-month-old iPhone, although a big part of that sales boost was definitely towards the low end, which resulted in a lower average selling price for iPhone. I think it went from 614 the previous quarter to 584 or 587 this quarter, which is still a lot of money, but it's definitely lower.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely means that Apple's selling a bigger mix of smaller iPhones and or older iPhones. And that's why Apple's profit, while the Apple's earnings did beat estimates, they were well below last year. Now, everyone expected them to be well below last year, but that's not the point. The point is that they are below last year, and that is in large part because of this new mix of older iPhones.
So Apple can sell the crap out of phones that are 2 and 3 years old?
Yes.
That's,
yeah, and, wow. And we heard some significant sales increases, in at least percentage-wise, in some emerging markets. Russia and India in particular. China was down overall. I think it was mainly because of Hong Kong. I think mainland China was up, but Hong Kong was down. But I think India was 400% up, and that is almost all iPhone 4s. Now, Apple doesn't sell a lot of iPhones in the first place in India, but so a 400% increase, while great, still doesn't necessarily mean big, huge numbers, but it contributed to that record.
Right, and a 400% increase, to me, also says that there's growing interest in that market for the iPhone.
Yes, and it also shows that Apple is willing to adjust its strategy and sales techniques in India. And that's where Apple has actually run into initial resistance in India. It's because, you know, India doesn't do carrier subsidies. You know, people pay for their phones up front, and it's largely a prepaid market. So you're buying your data and your minutes ahead of time. And in addition to that, cell phones in India are sold by this vast network of really small resellers, and there's like layers and layers and layers of distributors involved. And so Apple had a lot of learning to do when it went into India, and for a long time, Apple's India sales were negligible, and they're still close to negligible, but now they're less negligible. Or something.
And this is why we need to start our own tech analysis company. It's negligible, yes. But it's less negligible.
Exactly. Exactly. We would, in fact, fit in well.
People are going to pay for that.
I'm looking for the specifics on Samsung's Galaxy S4 numbers. So why don't you talk so we look a little bit less stupid.
Oh.
So I look a little less stupid.
Oh, okay. All right, so we had really good iPhone sales. We had good, but not as good as everyone wanted, iPad and Mac sales. So Apple reported for their revenue, was it $31.2 billion? I'm pulling numbers right off the top of my head. And their earnings came in at, I believe it was 6.9 billion.
Yeah, I believe it was 6.8 billion, and that's $7.47 a share for earnings per share. Now, part of that increase in earnings per share was because Apple had an accelerated buyback during the quarter. They retired. If I followed what Peter Oppenheimer was saying, they retired 13 million shares during the quarter as part of two different stock buyback programs.
Yeah, they do have the two stock buyback programs, because they had the one going and then announced the second one.
Yeah, and so the first one's closed out. I think that was initially 10 billion.
Right.
That one is done and complete, but they purchased another 9 million shares under the larger buyback program that was announced. Was that in January or April?
I believe that was in April.
Yeah, it was in April. So, or even May. Might have been after the earnings report.
Actually, right. I believe it happened right around the same time as the earnings report.
Okay, why does anyone listen to us? We don't know. We have no idea what we're talking about. No,
they
idea
listen
whatsoever.
To us because you're a daydream believer and a homecoming queen.
Oh, that's true. I am looking for, I guess it was maybe June's S4 numbers that were disappointing, but there were a bunch of cuts in Samsung's year-long estimates from JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley. So Morgan Stanley reduced earnings estimate by 1%, lowered sales expectations to 61 million units from 71 million units. Now, that's all of Samsung's phones for the... What quarter is that? Is that right? 60. What? Now I'm confused. They're not going to sell 80 million S4s. I mean, they sold...
There's a difference between selling them and pushing them into the channel.
Well, not even that. I mean, in May they sold... 10 million. Okay, all right, that makes sense. So it's 60... They cut the sales estimates of the Galaxy S4 to 60 million units on the year. That actually makes sense. Down from 80 million, which is a pretty huge cut.
Yes, it is.
Or 61 million units. Okay, so JP Morgan, 60 million units, down from 80. Morgan Stanley, 61 million units, down from 71 million units. And that's for the full year. Obviously, Samsung has a bunch of other Android devices it sells too, but it makes all its money from the high end. The low end phones that make up the vast majority of all Android device sales are no one makes any money on. I mean, they're profitless.
Right, and this is why Apple sticks to the end of the market that they're at.
Yes. Yes, it is. Now, I wrote a piece today, 7 reasons why Apple jumped 5%, 5.5% actually on Apple's earnings report.
That's a great piece.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, I think a lot of us are used to Apple being hammered the day after earnings, even if they turned in a great quarter. But today, the company stock did very well. It was up 5.5%. I haven't checked since I didn't check the close yet. But there are a number of reasons for that, and it's a very rational difference. And the absolute biggest reasons are that Apple beat estimates on earnings and revenue. Apple had an revenue uptick from last year. So despite Apple supposedly being in trouble, they still grew revenue slightly. It was definitely only slightly. iPhone numbers crushed, as we already discussed. But on top of that, Apple's guidance was encouraging. It was actually a little bit below what consensus estimates had been, but it was encouraging from the standpoint that Apple clearly was not expecting any kind of downturn in iPhone sales this quarter, even though it's heading into a refresh.
Right, and guidance numbers like this, I think, are more significant now since Apple is done using the Scotty principle for offering guidance.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So for more than a decade, CFO Peter Oppenheimer and his predecessor, former CFO Fred Anderson, sandbagged like the Dickens. You know, they say that they were going to do, you know, $20 billion in revenues and turn in $27 billion in revenues. You know, that sort of thing. They did that all the time, and it became a joke. And no one estimated anything based on Apple's own guidance. Instead, as I put in the piece, it became a parlor game to see, you know, how high people could actually make their estimates. And, you know, it's just everything was out of whack. It needed to stop, and it did. Back in January, Mr. Oppenheimer announced that from now on, Apple would be offering a guidance range that they actually think they'll hit. Shocking.
Yeah. And it took a couple quarters for everyone to really wrap their head around the fact that that's exactly what Apple's doing.
Right.
And we're at that place now. People get it.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. It seems like we're at that place.
Okay. I'll think positive. And I looked up Apple's closing for you. So they closed at 440.51 today. So they were up 21.52, which is 5.14%.
Excellent.
After hours, they're still climbing.
I do have a tiny, 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 tiny holding in Apple, for full disclosure sake.
I have no Apple stock, but I have a buttload of Apple products piled all around me right now.
Excellent. On behalf of shareholders everywhere, thank you, sir.
I'm just doing my part to make sure that you don't go hungry, Brian.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. And we also have the reality that Apple stock has just been beaten down. The company's reputation has been beaten down. And that changes perceptions.
It does. And people are talking about how talking about the glory days where Apple was over $700
right
a share.
So when Apple turns in a quarter where they had some significant beats, that becomes good news, especially when Wall Street was expecting that not to happen ahead of time. No one was expecting. I mean, the consensus estimates on the iPhone were at 26.6 million units. Apple sold 31.2. That is a huge delta. I mean, Apple crushed iPhone numbers.
Yeah, they totally did. And and like you said, a lot of those are the lower cost iPhones. But nonetheless, they sold a metric buttload of iPhones.
Yeah, just a ton of them. Just a ton.
Yeah. So so this isn't a quarter where the current iPhone is being considered by some people to be a little bit older now, plus 1 year and 2 year old models, and rumors of a refresh coming, and they still sold iPhones as fast as they could throw them at people.
Yeah. You know, I had a friend call me up and ask me for some buying advice. She and her husband looking to both upgrade their devices. They're running iPhone 3GSs, and they're pretty much ready to retire them. And it's like, well, you know, Apple's going to be releasing a new unit, a new iPhone model in a couple of months, and she's like, we don't care about that. We need new phones now.
I see a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly. And that was my point. That a lot of us, especially, you know, a lot of the people listening to this podcast, a lot of the people that read us on a daily basis, and of course, you know, we in the tech press in general, you know, we sort of get a little bit focused on the latest, greatest. By definition, if you're hearing this, you're probably a lot more plugged in than, you know, a typical average person. And a lot of people don't really care about the latest, greatest. They want something that works, and they need it now. They don't want to wait 2 months.
Yeah, they do. And for a lot of people, the new features won't matter. It doesn't matter what the new iPhone is. The new features don't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly, because if you look at the way people are buying right now, well, there you go. And most people don't care what processor is in their iPhone. A lot of people don't even realize there is a processor in their iPhone.
Yeah, or certainly don't know the specs of the darn thing.
Right. They don't care what megapixel they have for their camera.
Yeah, they care that it takes good photographs.
Exactly.
And that's something that Apple, the iPhone takes such great photographs, and Apple has not that they've never mentioned photographs in advertising, but they've kind of let that quietly sell itself, and it's done just that. And people know that you can take great photographs with the iPhone.
That's true, and Apple does have one or two of their iPhone commercials that highlight people taking photos.
Right.
They don't actually come out and say, look at this great camera, and look at the megapixels, and look at the optics. Da, da, da. No.
That's for the partisans.
Right. What they're doing is showing people using the iPhone. They're showing people being empowered.
Yes.
And capturing those special moments in their life.
Right.
And actually, I think that's a very brilliant way to present features. Because if I were to go to my mom and ask her how fast the processor needs to be in the iPhone before she gets one, she's not even going to understand what language I'm speaking.
Yeah,
I mean, and my mom is not stupid. She's a very smart person, but these are things she doesn't care about.
Right, it's the partisans that care about that. It's the people that write comments on our site, or you know, TechCrunch or The Verge or Engadget. You know, we're the people that care about this sort of thing, and we have a lot of fun arguing about it and talking about what's better, and you know, looking at specs and doing that sort of thing. But there's a lot of folks out there that. It's not even in their worldview.
No, it's
not. They're not thinking about it.
Now, for my mom, when she picked up her iPad Mini, the question. She had a couple questions. One was about very specific apps to help her with some rehabilitation, and the other was, can I do that video talking thing with my grandchildren? And of course, she's referring to FaceTime,
right?
And I said yes, and I will show you how. And that's it. She didn't care about resolution difference between front and rear cameras on her iPad Mini,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
So I think she's a good example of the average technology user. They want something that allows them to do what they want to do. They don't care about the numbers behind it.
Nope. And so, speaking of those numbers, all of these things combined, this is getting back to the stock thing, all of these things combined today to cheer investors. It was a number of factors that did make this quarter different from prior quarters, where investors tended to buy in the lead up to Apple's earnings and then sell afterwards, no matter what Apple announced. In this particular case, we have a combination of beats and solid guidance for the September quarter. Those two things combined are why Apple's stock did well today.
Right. And because I'm clearly still 12, every time you say beats, I wait with anticipation for you to go, and you haven't yet.
Oh,
that's awesome. Now, someone please sample that and turn it into a ringtone.
Oh, good Lord.
I want to be at Macworld, walking down the expo floor, and hear someone's phone ring, and it's you doing your beats.
That would be a grand day for all of us.
It really would.
A grand day for all of us. You know what? We should release the raw logic file for our podcast and let people remix us.
Oh my God. Yes.
I still want to be I'm waiting for someone to auto-tune us. No one's auto-tuned us.
Maybe they think our voices are so beautiful that they don't need auto-tune.
Dulcet tones. Yes. The dulcet tones of Jeff and Brian.
Yes.
Or something. All right. Speaking of dulcet tones, we noticed today that a 2008 podcast that we recorded has been getting a lot of traffic recently.
And that's right.
That gave me an idea. If you're listening to this podcast right now, in 2005 years ago, in 2018, can you please let us know what the score of, say, the World Series Game 7 is going to be, or something like that, so that we can bet on it ahead of time?
That would be fantastic.
Wouldn't that be great? I don't know. Just let us know something cool that's happening, so that we can turn around and place a bet on it. We'd really appreciate that. We'll be waiting for your note.
Thank you, and we'll buy you a drink.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. All right. While our listeners either turn us off or try to figure out what the heck I was meaning,
there's someone that's running temporal mechanics equations right now, trying to figure out how they can spend millions of dollars to create their time machine, for the sole purpose of having us buy them a free drink.
It's true. I believe that if I take the hyperbolated 6 of the deposition rate and turn around and put the quantum differentiator in there, that it should work perfectly.
Or just show up in your TARDIS, whatevs.
Yeah, that'll work. Whatevs. All right, so the other thing that we were going to talk about today is Apple and Maps.
We have just completed what I think counts as the absolutely weirdest segue we've ever had between topics.
And that's saying something.
That really is.
That's totally saying something.
But yeah, Maps.
Maps.
So Apple has completed the purchase of two map-related companies recently. One is called
location area. What's your problem with that?
I don't know, but it balances out because you have a problem. Say the name of the company you have a problem with.
Hop stop.
Oh, I derive so much satisfaction from hearing you stumble over hop stop.
I'm wanting to say hot stop or even hot spot. That's what I wanted to say is hot spot, but it's not. It's hop stop.
Right. So two companies that provide map related services and I can't even say it now.
Locationary.
What is my problem?
I don't know.
Locationary. All right. So Locationary is a service that it gives you information that you could get like from Yellow Pages websites about businesses, their hours, their locations.
Well, it doesn't give you. It gives access to people, to subscribers, to enterprise or app developers, or you know, other services, other third-party services who were looking for local business information.
Right, and unlike other services, this can be updated dynamically. So you end up with information that, in theory, is far more recent and far more accurate than you can get from other sources.
Right. So, and they manage, they have this platform called Saturn. And Saturn is what's called a federated data platform. And it's part of the class, it's called big data, which is this new class of enormous databases that can be mined for information. Big data played a big role in the 2012 elections. Big data is what Google does, essentially. Big data is what it's what the NSA does. Yes. If you're listening, and I know you are. But that data comes from multiple sources. And what Locationary does is they've developed a way for this platform to take in new information live and reconcile it live and give their subscribers access to all of this information that's accurate on a live basis. And that's which is the reason why Apple wants it is for local search, which is what Apple has said that they're targeting with both Siri and Maps in the first place, is local search.
Right. And if you are in a position where you want to be able to provide more accurate data to your end users, well, having a service that is getting constantly updated with that type of information sure helps a lot.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And this is like right now, Apple is largely depending on Yelp for help with local search.
Which, I mean, Yelp is good because you are getting a lot of constantly updating information because Yelp is a crowdsourced service. And so your end users are providing the information, really.
Right. But what Locationary will do is allow Apple to provide very accurate data on not only where a business is, but whether or not they're still open, whether or not they've relocated, whether or not they're temporarily shut down for remodeling, that sort of thing. That is a really important thing when it comes to local search. Recently, both Google Maps and Apple Maps had me looking for an Indian grocery store that has been closed for 9 months.
Oh, that's painful on a couple levels. First, because the store was gone, you couldn't get to it, and the second is that the aromas inside an Indian grocery store are just absolutely magical. I just love going to those places.
It's true, and I mean, you know, first world problems for sure. But the point is that in the effort to get users, and for Apple, of course, the effort of getting users translates into the effort to get customers buying Apple hardware. And for Google, it's simply to have people using their services so that they can add that information to their profiles on us. In both of those joint races, having accurate local business data is key. And Locationary, I believe the Locationary has information all over the world. I don't know if it's all over the entire world, but I know it's not just U.S. They're a Canadian company, and I know it's not just U.S. or just Canadian.
Right. So, yeah. So this is a service that Apple can use in multiple markets.
Yes. And because part, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how much of Apple, how much of Locationary Apple uses, because right now Locationary's revenue comes from multiple subscribers. Right, you know, if you're making an app that involves local search, you can pay Locationary money, get access to their SDKs, build it into your app all you want. One would assume, of course, that Apple will do that for its own developers, for App Store developers, iOS mm-hmm. developers. But I would be very surprised if Apple allowed that to continue for other platforms, people outside of the iOS ecosystem.
Yeah, I suppose if the revenue Locationary was generating was high enough that, or significant enough that Apple is like, yeah, this will add a nice little chunk to our bottom line, let's keep it going, they might consider it. But otherwise, if they don't cut off everyone, I would be really surprised.
Yeah, even there, I don't think they would. You know, they don't ever buy companies for the revenue stream. They buy companies to integrate the technology and or the people. In this case, supposedly it's going to be both. The team at Locationary will be joining Apple, and they're of course integrating the technology as well. So this doesn't even shore up something in Apple Maps. This isn't fixing something in Apple Maps. This is dramatically has the potential for dramatically boosting Apple mm-hmm. Maps and the value of Apple Maps and Siri.
This isn't a crutch to fix something that's broken. This is an enhancement.
Correct. And this will absolutely be a big part of Siri too. This is not just Maps related. This is Siri and Maps related.
You know, I'm expecting at some point when I say, Siri, find me the closest Starbucks. She comes back and says, okay, Jeff, there's a Starbucks on Elkhorn, but it's being remodeled right now. So the next closest one is over here. Would you like me to direct you there?
Right. And I'm waiting for her to say, are you sure you want to go to Starbucks? There's so many better coffee shops that you could choose from.
And then I'll come back and say, but Siri, I don't drink coffee. And then she'll come back and say, I'll never understand you, Jeff.
Jeff, I watched this episode of it totally reminds me of this episode of Twilight Zone that I watched called From Agnes with Love, and Agnes is A period, G period, N period, E period, S period, because it's a 1964 computer, a mainframe system, and she falls in love with a programmer and she wants to control her programmer. Anyway, that's what you're reminding me of. It's a good episode, by the way.
It is a good episode. Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, everyone, go watch it. You can watch it on IMDb.
Yeah, it was interesting. I haven't gone to look to see what other episodes you can watch through IMDb, but they're embedding full episodes of things through Hulu.
Yeah. So you can watch complete television episodes right in IMDb.
Yeah, we should do that as a quick tip.
We really should.
Yeah, that's a good quick tip.
We live in the future, Brian.
We do live in the future. Not 2018, unfortunately.
No, but if we did...
We could make money on a bet.
I know. We could totally go back in time and... Yeah. See, I keep looking over my shoulder to see if future Jeff or future Brian is there with a note for me.
Yeah, and they're not. They're not.
Those guys are jerks.
Yeah. Speaking of the future, by the way, Logic Pro 10, I think I said X earlier, Logic Pro 10... The new version of Logic looks incredible. It's got such a pleasing interface. It looks so good. It just looks so good. I'm super pleased with it.
I'm glad because you deserve to have nice audio editing tools.
Thank you. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So the other company that Apple bought,
HopStop.
I intentionally stopped there so you would have to say it.
I know that you did. They provide transit data, that big thing that Apple doesn't have, that Apple Maps doesn't have.
Right.
So bike routing information, foot traffic routing information, and mass transit in, I think it's 140 different markets in the U.S.
So that's pretty significant.
It's not complete, but it's pretty significant. And I suspect they were developing some of the same information outside the U.S. But at the very least, the whatever platform the company has developed could be used by Apple to do that. You know, Apple obviously has the resources to be able to expand. They could expand it to Mars if they wanted to. Clearly.
Yeah, they could. And
of course, that's pretty easy on Mars. Walk that way.
Yeah.
Well, stop when you get there.
can you imagine if the Mars rovers were depending on that? The jokes we would have right away about how they end up in the wrong crater and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's true. That's totally true. So this is a big shortcoming in Apple Maps right now. This is filling a huge hole for Apple, and I hope that they can integrate it in time for the release of iOS 7. That would be fantastic.
That would be really cool. You know, it's possible that they've been negotiating long enough that they were able to start integrating the technology.
Right. And that is always possible.
Yeah. So then the purchase was just like the final formality.
Right. Now, we should back up. We should say that Locationary's data comes from we called it a federated data platform. Mm-hmm. And what that means is it's getting information from multiple sources. Now, as best we can determine, one of those sources is through crowdsourcing, but we couldn't figure out where that supposedly is happening, and Locationary itself never says that.
Yeah, my guess, and keep in mind this is just a guess, is that the clients that are using their services have a way of building into their own apps and websites features that let their end users leave comments and update information, and that it comes back into the system through those channels.
Yeah, but see, that's another thing that'll be cut off. Is that thunder?
Yes.
Oh, that's great news.
Yes, it started raining just a few minutes ago.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, you guys you've been in the middle of a heat wave, and you've been dealing with fires for the last year.
Yes, it's not raining enough to make a significant difference, but this is a start, so I'm really happy.
Yeah, nice thunder. That's good. If that's actually the case, where are these apps? Because I've never heard of them. So who are the people that are supposedly putting this information? Like with HopStop is partially the HopStop crowdsources live traffic information.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like Waze, right? And they call it incident reporting. You know, so you can get alerts saying that, you know, so-and-so said that, this subway station is closed, or, you know, they just blocked it off or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or there's been an accident or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, which you can do with Waze. And what's the other one? Phantom Alert, I think?
I'm not familiar with that one.
I think it's Phantom Alert's the other one. But there you go. So,
but we know that that exists because they have an app. They don't have the Windows app anymore, but no one used it, so that doesn't matter. They have an app, and we know that that's where that crowdsourcing information is coming from. If Locationary is crowdsourcing stuff, I don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns with Locationary.
Yeah. So, but what we do know is that they're pulling, they're probably pulling, what I think is that they're pulling from multiple commercial databases, and they, I think that they also have a way for businesses to manage their own information. But again, I don't actually know what that mechanism is. I couldn't find it. So I'm not really sure, that that's the case. We know that the information exists from somewhere, and they're pulling it from somewhere, and they're integrating it. And the integration itself, that reconciling process, and the fact that they can do that live is, a big part of why they have value.
Right. And which ultimately means, as an iOS or an OS X Mavericks user, there'll be a lot of value in this, because you'll be getting up-to-date information about the locations that you want to go to.
Right. So, Apple, both of these purchases came down, I think it was on Friday, wasn't it? Friday or Thursday, it was last week.
Yeah, if they weren't on the same day, it was within a day or so of each other.
Oh, they were the same day for sure.
Okay, well, there you go, same day.
What they mean is
is Apple really is serious about improving maps, just like they said. Didn't Tim Cook say they were doubling down? No, that was security.
Doubling down on secrecy.
Yeah.
But he said that they were putting all of their energy into improving Apple Maps.
Right. And so buying companies like HopStop and Locationary, oh my God, I said it right.
You did.
That's a significant step towards that. And they also have that patent filing that they did for crowdsource services that are similar to what Waze offers.
Right, right, right. And, you know, in adding that element into Maps is, I want to see it, and I want to see it soon. I can't wait to see it. This is going to be a good thing for Apple Maps, and that means it's going to be a good thing for us as users. I have been saying all along that Apple has the resources to make Apple Maps a best in class service. They are still way behind Google in terms of features. I think Apple Maps looks better than Google Maps.
Oh, but, yeah, by far.
But Google Maps still has Apple crushed on features and data. And, you know, Apple still has a long way to go. These two purchases are going to help close that gap, and it's going to be a great thing, and I can't wait for it to actually come to market.
I'm very excited to see it all come to market as well. And really, the big advantage I see Google having right now from an app standpoint is that they are offering more features. As far as accuracy goes, I know there's people that will disagree with me adamantly, but I don't see Google Maps being any more accurate for me than Apple Maps.
No, I think that Apple has largely fixed that. Any ongoing bad press is really just sort of, you know, momentum from the bad press Apple got back in September of last
right.
year. I think that Apple has closed a lot of those gaps. But there are things you can do with Google Maps that you can't do with Apple Maps. And one thing I love that Google we talked about this last week, didn't we? Didn't we talk about Google Maps?
Yeah, because we're both really impressed with what they've been doing with the interface.
Yeah, exactly.
Very iOS 7 feel.
Yeah, very iOS 7 feel. And then they've added all those features where they're tying in Google Plus. I mean, you know, Google is making Google Plus viable as a social networking platform. I mean, when Google Plus first came out, in my opinion, it was kind of a joke. But rather than canceling it, which is what Google usually ends up getting around to doing for things that it launches, they have really put a lot of effort into making it more and more and more usable. And now you can get recommendations on restaurants based on your Google Plus circles within Google Maps 2.0 on your iPhone, your iPad, or on the web.
Right.
That's great. Love the Thunder.
Yeah. It actually is totally awesome. As long as that Thunder doesn't mean that we're having lightning strikes nearby.
Right. Because then you'd have to, like, pack up shop and hide.
Right, which is totally annoying, but
So you know, Google is pushing forward, making Maps more usable. They're like I said, they're making Google Plus a more and more usable and realistic and useful and fun social networking platform. They're sort of blending those tools. You know, it's interesting. Apple, we talk a lot about Apple controlling the software and the hardware.
Yes, we do.
Right, and we talk about what an advantage that is for Apple, and it is. It's a huge advantage for Apple. But Google has control over a vast empire also, and that company has been doing a great job of leveraging things from one to make the other better. And that's a good thing too. And you know, as long as both of these companies keep pushing forward, we as the end users benefit.
You know, and ultimately, that's what it's all about. It doesn't matter if you're a big fan of Google and Android or a big fan of Apple and iOS. It's about making sure that we have this innovation happening so that we get better products. And in the end, as consumers, we win.
Yep. We do. We do win. And Microsoft loses, but that's another issue.
You know, isn't it interesting how Microsoft in the mobile space seems to be totally marginalized right now? And to a degree, it feels like interest in Windows on the desktop or is waning as well.
Yeah, it's hard to know how much of that is our world, because we are so invested in the world of Apple. And you know, covering Apple every day, but by certainly it's true with the mobile space, and it seems like it's true with the desktop space. And Microsoft is never going to. Wow,
my microphone bounced.
That was intense. I don't know if I'm going to leave that in for our listeners, but if I can, I will. Microsoft is in trouble as long as Steve Ballmer's there. I've said that multiple times.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Steve Ballmer is not the right person to be running that company. Mm-mm. And I can't tell you who is the right person right now because I was sworn to secrecy. No, because I really don't know who would be the right person to run that company. But I do know who the wrong person is.
Yeah, and that's Steve Ballmer. You know, I'm pretty sure I said it on our show. Steve loves Microsoft. I think Steve would die for Microsoft, but he doesn't love Microsoft enough to quit. And that's too bad. And he's going to end up having to be fired. And that's too bad, too. But they need a product guy. They need someone like... you know, it's really too bad. It's really too bad that John Rubenstein ran into the HP buzzsaw. Because if he'd been able to prove himself there, someone like that could maybe have done some great things at Microsoft. And maybe he still could. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But I have to wonder if he's interested in making that kind of jump again. Because the whole HP thing had to have left a very bitter taste in his mouth. Well,
you're totally right. And it wouldn't surprise me to see someone like John Rubenstein. So we're talking, of course, about the... guy who largely helped bring the iPhone and iPod both to market. Wait, was he involved with the iPhone? He was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Wow, I suddenly like had this memory crash.
It's from the lightning.
He
it
left
you like that.
Fair enough. He left Apple. He went to Palm. He guided Palm into bringing WebOS to market. And then he guided Palm to being sold to HP. Unfortunately, HP was then taken over by Leo Apotheker, and Leo Apotheker wanted to turn HP into a software services company, and you know, the WebOS division was gutted and plundered.
Oh, horribly.
And my point is that I would be shocked if John Rubenstein didn't have something to prove, at least to himself, probably to the world. And it wouldn't surprise me if he decided to do it via a small startup. That's certainly possible. I do think he's got something to prove, and I think that he wants to prove it. And certainly turning around Microsoft would be that improvement. But, you know, I don't think he has the resume to get that kind of job. But they need someone like that. That was my real point. Microsoft needs a product guy. A product guy who understands the engineering side on the hardware and the software, and who has some vision and taste. And that happens to be someone like John Rubenstein.
Yeah, I could see where a John Rubenstein would be a really good fit for Microsoft. I don't know if it's John Rubenstein specifically, but someone like him. The hardware guy with the passion and the vision.
Who understands software too.
Yes.
It can't be anyone from within. It can't be anyone from within Microsoft, because they're just going to perpetuate the problem. The culture of Microsoft is not geared to making great products. It's never been geared to making great products.
No, it's always been a company about market share.
Exactly. Market share and licensing and to give Steve Ballmer a little bit of credit, he does at least understand that design matters and that software and hardware matters. You know, the effort with the Surface, the effort with the Zune, being closely, you know, basically paying Nokia to make Windows Phone devices and working very closely with that company. You know, all of that stuff shows that he gets that there's a problem. I just don't think he has the vision to be able to solve that problem, and the proof of that is the Surface.
Yeah, and the Surface, well, there are people that really like it. I don't know. No, I take that back. I do know someone that likes the Surface, and he's really intelligent, and I think he has good reasons for liking it, but he also has an iPad. And other than that, I don't know anyone that actually really likes the Surface.
No, I don't either. And
it could have been so much more. And I say this a lot about Microsoft products. Do you remember a few years ago the UMPC project, where Microsoft was working on this concept where it was sort of iPad-ish. And it did this wireless data thing, and it had the GPS built in, it was a very clever concept, and they had some videos showing how they thought it would be used, and the reality is it turned out to be just this total failure. Like, it never got off the ground.
Right.
And the problem there is Microsoft right now, they're able to go part way with the vision.
Right.
But then they stumble when it comes time to really implement it in a good way. And I see that happening with the Surface as well. It had so much potential, but it was bogged down by the fact that it was a Microsoft product.
Well, it was bogged down by the fact that the Microsoft designed it to extend and perpetuate the desktop legacy. Because Microsoft, see, you know, Apple will ditch something. Apple has ditched the most popular iPod model, right?
Yes.
The iPod Mini.
Yeah, that at the time, that was the single most popular iPod ever made.
Right.
And it took a long time for anything after that to eclipse it.
Well, the Nano was very successful immediately.
It was replaced with the Nano. It took a while for the Nano to eclipse the popularity of the Mini, simply because the Mini had been so popular. But it did, and the Nano is a great iPod.
The Nano is a great iPod, but the point is that Apple will take something that works, and when they have something that works better, they will ditch the old thing. They will just ditch it. They don't care. They will ditch it, and they will move on. And they don't care. They're never out to protect the legacy stuff. And Microsoft is the exact opposite. They're constantly looking to protect Windows Desktop and Office. And mm-hmm. and in this case, we have this, not even a trifecta, it's like the octfecta or something. I don't even know. It's they have kept Office.
That's off a German techno band from the 70s, isn't it?
Octfecta. And they kept Office off the iPad. It's funny. At this point, if Microsoft wants to make money in mobile, it's going to be through releasing iPad Office on the iPad. But that's beside the point. They kept Office off of iPad, and to in order to artificially make Windows 8 and Surface more palatable. I won't say interesting, more palatable. That failed. Mm-hmm. They bogged down Surface. Surface Pro with desktop compatibility. They designed Surface to be used with the keyboard. And then at the same time, they have all these interface things that make a little more sense on a tablet than they do on the desktop in the desktop version of Windows. It's like all of these things gone wrong, and all for mm-hmm. the sole purpose of perpetuating their legacy business. And that's the wrong way to do it.
Well, see, another problem Microsoft has is they want to have the one ring of technology through Windows, where it's one platform to rule them all, and it doesn't matter if it's a phone, if it's a server, if it's a high-end workstation, the same operating system for everyone everywhere.
Yeah, contrast that with Apple. Apple took OS X, stripped it down, came up with a completely different way of interfacing with it, and then released it as iPhone OS.
Right.
You know, same guts, but a completely different way of doing things. There was no Mac compatibility in the original iPhone. None. Well, I mean, I'm sorry. You could get you put all your data on it through iTunes, but I mean, there was no pretense at having the iPhone look or work or resemble or taste like a Mac at all. None. Zero. Zilch. And Microsoft took the exact... It's so funny. Microsoft had the blueprint of success in front of them, and they looked at that blueprint, and they studied it for years. And they said, aha, the secret here is to put a keyboard. That's what people really want on a tablet. They want a keyboard. And the secret here is that they want to be able to run their desktop applications on their tablets. That's what people are looking for. That's what they're clamoring for.
If that were the case, the iPad would have failed miserably.
How do you look at the success of the iPad and the success of the iPhone and conclude those things? How do you do that? How do you do that? You do that by not having any vision, and you do that by not having any taste. No, it just drives me. It's just so freaking obvious. I'm not saying that I could run Microsoft by any stretch of imagination. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that there are some things that are very obvious on how not to do stuff. Now, there's a big difference between understanding how not to do something and how to do it. But
right.
But just
I love it when I can work the conversation around to some point when you rant.
We weren't even going to talk about Microsoft.
No, and here we are.
And now we have to fit into the headline. Yeah. And we're running along, so let's take this opportunity to get out of here.
Which makes sense, considering I apparently do have lightning strikes happening close to me.
Yes.
All right. Well, then I'm going to take us out.
Okay.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm JGam at both places. And check out freshbrewtales.com, where I tell you all the amazing things I see at coffee shops. And keep your electronics grounded.
Oh, good advice. And you can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. And I'm on app.net at Brian Chaffin, also with a Y. And my personal blog is GeekTales, TELLS.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed, because we love you.
We do. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
So, since you're not wearing pants, I figure I better tell you, get that mole checked out.